Welcome to Podnuts, a computer repair podcast, episode number 247, Security and Malware. I'm your host, Jeff Halsh. That's our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running your computer repair business. Call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Let me introduce the co-hosts. We have John Dubinsky from the Maven Group. How you doing, John?
Jeff, I'm locked and loaded, heading upstream, and I'm feeling like I'm in the eye of the hurricane.
You know, since you said that, let's go ahead and talk about for a quick second, and definitely all our prayers and thoughts are going out to not only the people in Houston, Texas, and those areas for Hurricane Harvey, but also the people that are in the middle of the Hurricane Irma over in Florida. So we definitely want to give a shout out to those people and hope everybody is staying safe inside. I know my parents are down there and hopefully they are in some sort of shelter where they're at. So I think everything is good. I've been kind of watching a camera feed down there on Siesta Beach, which is just outside of on the edge of Sarasota there. And basically it looked okay as far as right now. And right now I have not been able to get a hold of them, probably because of either cell phone service or phones dying because of no place to plug in, get battery power, that type of thing. But it looks like everything is pretty pretty smooth down there.
Well, as we record this, my brother's in Naples and my mother-in-law is in Fort Myers, and they're getting struck right now.
Okay. So, yeah, I've been watching it over the last couple of days. On the Google Map has a pretty interesting thing where I think they did it for, I can't remember what they called it, but basically you can look at a Google map and actually watch. It's updated on the fly. You can see where the hurricane is and kind of where it's moving over the state and the direction it's going as it's doing it. So it's kind of cool. Shout out to Google for that, because they always come up with the coolest things to watch that type of thing. Because I will tell you, I went to look for all the information on anything that had to do with the hurricane. And it's hard to find the information because all these people out there basically want to put things on there like, here's where the storm's going. Here's where our CGI has told us, or our computer has told us that it's going to go, and this and that and the other. And it's like, it's just news after news after news after news, but not really telling you like up-to-date information. And that makes me a little bit irritated with the news media or even internet media out there, because listen, when people want information, real information, make it easy to find. You're a piece of garbage if you just wanted to get as many hits and things that you want in order for people to watch your channel or whatever. Yes, I just said that because it does irritate me to that point where when there are things going on, we definitely want to know about them, and you need to make it easy to find on this big, huge internet that we have.
You know, and I just pulled up that map and I put it in the show note or in the chat room too. But now if you look out a little bit to, what is that, the east, there's another hurricane on the way.
Yes. Yeah, and it looks like that is, it was ramping up as a Category 4. I can't remember what the name of that is, but something with a J, I think, or something, isn't it?
I don't know. It doesn't pull up the name on that one yet. I don't know.
That would be the next letter in the alphabet, H-I-J. They usually name them in alphabetical order, I guess. I don't know why, but maybe easy to remember. Jose. Okay, it was with a J. Not Jose, Jose, with a J. J-O-S-E. All right, so anyways, yeah, definitely, hopefully that comes nowhere near any landmass after the last two humongous hurricanes that we've had. But I did read a meme on Facebook earlier today that, because I live in Michigan, it basically said something to the effect of, this is why I live in a place where my face hurts. And for those that live in the north, you'll definitely understand that. For the rest of you, it gets a little cold here sometimes, but that's okay because I'm nowhere near the water.
Yeah, but you say that. We're due for a good tornado or something.
Well, that's true. That is true. All right. Anyways, let's go ahead and, I'm glad you brought that up, but let's go into our tip for the week. John, what do you got for us?
Well, I'm going to throw a little tip out there for all those techs that deal with home clients. Now, this is not a recommendation, but I got a call and got sent a bunch of information from a sales manager at this company. And the product is called Cujo. C-U-J-O. And I'll put the link, obviously, in the show notes and in the chats.
So is that as in a rabid dog?
Well, your kids might think it might be that because it gives you a lot of control over your home internet and you could shut all them off or set up times. But basically what Cujo is a smart firewall built for your home. It's easy to control from your smartphone. So I thought it had some cool features. Obviously, like I said, I've never used it, but in the show notes, I will provide you a sales manager contact. They have a nice little reseller program. Nice discounts, all that kind of good stuff. So for home user techs, I thought this might be something I had never heard of it. So that's why I'm throwing it out there. Use with caution, but it looks pretty cool.
Very cool. Now, there's always good things out there that a lot of us don't know about unless somebody tells us about them, because we need, you know, we need ways to lock down the internet, especially for the home user.
Well, here's a little toss out. If somebody jumps on board and it ends up being good and they use it, why not come on the show and share that with us? That'd be sweet.
All right. So let's see. My tip for the week is I got a notification. For those that don't know, I got sent a Synology NAS probably about a month ago. I've been messing with it periodically on and off. I got some backup software set up on it, but there was a huge update that was supposedly was going to make it more secure, do some different things. So I will say, as far as updating the Synology NAS, it's just as easy as anything else. It really makes it nice. That's all I wanted to say is there was a big, huge update. So if you are running Synology NASs for your business or for other things, definitely you go ahead and get that update done. It makes it super simple to do. So, but you do have to go into the software and definitely check for it and download it and run the update. And it's pretty easy. So I like it. And I will give some more. As soon as I get some more things set up on that, I will let you know what types of things I'm using. It looks like a great, robust NAS for doing the things that I need to do here in the home office. And I know a lot of business owners actually use them at their businesses that are not having to use servers and domains and things like that. They can use something for backing up their data and actually having where they can serve certain types of files and databases and stuff like that. So, all right. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll get into our main topic for today. If you want to tell your story, there is a perfect way for you to do that. If you are a business owner or a technician that works for a company, you can sign up to be a guest on Podnuts Daily. And you can do that by very simply sending an email to guest@podnuts.com. And that will get you in there where we can set up a time to be able to do that. And so you can come on, tell your story audibly. I know there's a lot of people out there that will post things on Facebook and different things like that, but I believe that this is a great medium for people to get information that they need on a weekly basis. And so it's kind of nice to hear from different people's perspectives on what they do in their business. Now, a lot of people will say that they do the same things as everybody else. And you really don't. Everybody has their little thing that they do that's unique and maybe can explain it in a different way that makes sense to somebody that's either new coming in or even somebody that's been doing it for a while that really hasn't taken the time to think of new ways of doing business. So that's why I feel it's very important and very fundamental for new people to come on all the time. So for those that listen to this show and also listen to Podnuts Daily, you'll see that there's not a whole lot of new content that's coming out of Podnuts Daily. So every once in a while, I will do this and I will put a push out for people to sign up. So again, just send an email to guest@podnuts.com and you can come on and talk about your business and how you do things.
Absolutely. That's one thing I'm going to do at the Unconvention here coming up this week. For this coming week, is I'm going to recruit as many people as I can.
So we talked about, at the beginning of the show, we talked about security and malware being our topic for today. And what I want to do is, I want to talk about with John, what the best way that we can secure our clients from malware and other potential mishaps. because I think there's a lot of people out there that believe that you can protect your client 100%. And I, living in a real world, being as old as I am, understand that that will never, ever be a reality. And I will say that there's probably two types of companies out there. There are companies that have been hacked, and there's companies that don't know they've been hacked. Other than that, that's all there is. So the reality is, a lot of times we do the best that we can to secure our clients' networks, to secure their workstations. But I think one of the big things that comes up probably on a regular basis would be things of malware. Things that pop up, things that slow the computer down, things that will take away from the productivity of the client themselves. And so they come to us so that we can go in there and fix the problem. But I want to look at it from a standpoint of how can we mitigate or make the problem less than what it is. And we understand that the client themselves is usually their own worst enemy. So I just want to talk about some things that maybe we can talk about as far as what are some of the things we can put in place? What are some of the things that we can consistently remind our clients about that will stop them from doing the dumb things that they do to get their computers infected?
A broad topic, Jeff. I really like it. So I think the way I want to approach it, if it's okay with you, is let's talk about castles. You know, in the sand, any kind of sand castle. And this is nothing new. I mean, there's been the analogy as far as security inside of a network or even on a PC or for anybody is the analogy of a castle. You know, a moat full of alligators, really high wall, some talented and trained guards, you know, the oil you dump on the bad guys that show up. So, and I guess this all goes back to maybe talking about the term would be layered protection. So as you mentioned, we want to add some protection that stays out of the way of our users as much as possible, because the more security you have, the more inconvenient it is. And if things are ultra secure and hard to use, your users will immediately try to find ways around those things. So we want solid protection that works with users and their productivity. So with that said, I think where I'd like to start our discussion is let's start talking about outside of our castle walls. What can we do to protect that? My focus isn't going to be so much on individual products, but just let's just sort of talk about what can be done. So the first thing outside of our walls, what we can do when our users are accessing the internet is looking at domain name or DNS and securing your DNS server or services. And I'm not talking about your local DNS. I'm talking about your web DNS, like Google DNS, 8.8.8.8 or 8.8.4.4. There are several services that you can use. Everyone is probably very familiar with OpenDNS or Webroot has secure DNS, Webroot secure DNS, which are great places to start that are either free or low cost to add a first layer of filtering on things that are coming in from the outside. So those products may filter out known categories of sites, sites that they know are infected, or maybe things like pornography, gambling, or things that you don't want coming into your LAN. And they can also be a first line of defense against things that pop up, you know, that may be unknown or they may be able to filter out.
That's good, John, because I think a lot of times we, and you see this with when you have something like a home-based router in a business. And there's not a whole lot you can do to secure that. Now, there are things you can do through OpenDNS, and we're trying to look for, a lot of times, the free tools to use. And those aren't always as robust as I think we need. And we don't need people in a business, a lot of times, do not need access. Even people in a home do not need access to absolutely everything that's out on the internet. They need to go, you know what, I really don't need to go here. My kids don't need to go there. But here's some of the things that I want access to. Now, that's not going to be the case for everybody because we know certain people have bad habits and they just want the Wild West.
Well, good answer to any of this, Jeff, would be it depends. I mean, there are going to be there are businesses out there or even home users that do need to hit you know, maybe domains that are in the Asia Pacific countries, but there are certain businesses that don't. So you can just start with your DNS and block access to those IPs or those countries, you know, right off the bat to isolate that access right out of the gate. So you just don't even have to worry about it. But you're right. You know, a lot of it depends, and it's tough to grow around bad habits. You know, it's funny you say that because, you know, I have a lot of this lockdown at a lot of the organizations I deal with. Believe it or not, I have gotten a call from an owner or two that says, keep it locked out for everybody else, but I want to be able to get to my stuff that I can look at. So make sure I can get to this stuff, if you know what I mean.
Now, when that happens, though, John, what do you have them, like, send an email, sign something? Because this would be kind of awkward. But something to the effect of, you understand that this is not covered under our plan, and that if something happens to your workstation, it's going to cost you extra.
Absolutely. And depending on the nature of the request, it may be some sort of generic email that just says that, or it might be specific depending on the subject matter. But yes, we always do some sort of documentation, and I usually only document that through email. But different companies handle that in different ways.
And I think that's fine. As long as you have a paper trail or digital paper trail, as it were, that is perfectly okay. And email is one of those, and there are many, many ways to back that information up. And so you can access it whenever you want. All right. So, yes, so we're going to talk about if we're not going to cut the internet connection off, because obviously that would be the best thing, right?
Well, we do want to be able to perform some sort of business activities with the outside world. So I don't know how realistic that is.
Do we really?
But simpler times, yes.
So I think that's great. So starting with the DNS, actually controlling some of the stuff before it even hits the network, I think is a good way to start. Now, okay, now we're past that. We're into where now we're hitting the equipment. And what can we do from that standpoint of being able to mitigate the amount of things that they are getting pinged with all the time?
Well, you're right. We've hit the castle walls. They've crossed the moat. And now they're hitting, hopefully, our advanced UTM device, our unified threat management device, or our firewall. And I'll put a link in the show notes, just of a brief definition or explanation of what a UTM is. But we're all familiar with what a router is, and a basic router will perform many types of what is called a NAT firewalling, and that's the pure basics. What a UTM does, and we're talking about devices from like Calyptix, SonicWall, Fortinet, WatchGuard, Meraki. It provides a lot of advanced services along with that firewall, like stateful packet inspection. So it can look at each packet of information that's coming in, categorize that packet, and then allow access or deny access. Probably the most important thing, in my opinion, that a UTM does is intrusion prevention and or intrusion detection. So it will detect if there's something in the network that you did not want to allow and or prevent that from getting into the network. There are all different ways that UTMs handle this. SonicWall might do something different than Calyptix. Fortinet might do something different than WatchGuard. You'll find most guys like us in business scenarios usually try to standardize on one so that you can master what one does. I use Calyptix. Obviously, on the pro show, we know guys that use WatchGuard and SonicWall. I've used probably all of them. I can't say any of them are horrible. They all do their job, but I would suggest if you're going to jump on the bandwagon with one, that you choose one that you can manage, because they all are a little bit different.
Yeah, I think standardizing on something like that is also not only is a good idea from the standpoint of being able to get the same stuff, but also from the standpoint of you're actually able to know it inside and out. Whereas if you're trying to support many different types of routers and things, a lot of times that will take you extra time to figure out exactly how those menus in those routers or UTMs are, because they're all a little bit different. Everybody, the engineers that came up with the software in the background or the firmware to basically be able to change things, each one of them is peculiar in themselves, in that they think that the way that they want to do it is the right way. And that's fine, as long as once you learn one, you can stick with that one, and then you can get in and out quickly when somebody has a problem, versus taking a bunch of extra time to relearn what you've only seen once every 6 months, maybe.
Because what you're going to do with your UTM is you're going to if we can imagine tightening the screw, you're going to keep tightening the screw on your UTM security until the pain threshold becomes too high for your end user. So a great example would be your UTM will eventually block something that you do not want to be blocked, whether that's maybe you're adding some cameras to your office and you need to open some ports so that those cameras can communicate with the outside world. It's a lot easier if you have one management interface, just like you said, Jeff, than if you had five different ones that you got to try to figure out each time you go in. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think that's important. So now we've gotten past the castle wall, so to speak. So they're inside our walls now. They're kind of where we don't want them to be. So now where do we go to protect ourselves at this point?
Well, now we need our soldiers to engage. Our endpoints need to step up and help us with security. So the primary one everybody knows about is our good friend antivirus, which is still around. Some say it's not as effective as it used to be with the what's out there now. But, you know, there's obviously Webroot, Bitdefender, the controversial Windows Defender. Love it or hate it. You've got other products that ride with that, like Malwarebytes or Crypto Prevent. The other product that is now in the market is called a FIM. And don't ask me what that stands for yet, Jeff. I'm looking it up.
Darn you.
I did do show prep, but
a FIM.
File Integrity Monitoring. All right. And what... So basically what a FIM does is there's a lot of companies that do this, and I'll put some links in the show notes, but a FIM actually monitors what every file on your endpoint is doing. So let's say you get a file infected, or if there's a adverse file on your system, the monitoring system will show you, well, did that file send information out? Did it change other files on the system? So on and so forth. So that you have a complete audit of everything that's happening with all the files on your system in the simplest form. So really what you need that for is compliance. I've run into one so far, a PCI audit, that which is credit card, that had a FIM requirement in order to pass it, so that the end user needed to have a FIM. I don't remember which one this was, which audit company it was. But my customer actually decided they were going to switch credit card processors because they did not want the expense to meet that requirement. And the other processor did not require that. So,
interesting. Okay. Wow. All right. So now we've gotten in there and we can check things like the files. We've got our endpoint protection on the workstations. And basically, so we almost went from really the main castle to like maybe maybe the main town wall down to the main castles, which may be the workstations. And so now we've got the endpoint protection that's kind of stepping up in guarding those to a certain extent. But we know that this, even with all these layers of protection, we still get calls and tickets all the time for people saying, hey, I've got something weird on my system, something popped up, my system is really slow, why is that? And so a lot of times that can go a couple different ways. And I've seen this with endpoint protection being too robust. And here's kind of a balancing act that we get into, because if it's too robust, it will make it so that the client can no longer do their work, or makes it so painstakingly slow that they just don't want to do their work. And on the other side, if it's too light and really not doing anything, a lot of times we don't know if it's doing everything that it possibly can do. So what are some of the other things? Now that we get down to this point, what would you say is probably the next level where people need to guard themselves, where they're getting these infections, pop-ups, and different things from, besides just the internet?
Well, the next thing we want to look at is what we're going to do before the attack occurs, I think. You know, what is our boot camp or what is our training? So inside the organization, we want to talk about things like risk assessments. Where do we think those attacks are going to come from? Protecting our data through encryption and backup. And how do we prepare for those type of things? And then training, ongoing training. You know, are we going to train our users against phishing emails? Are we going to train our users for good behavior on the internet? And do we have policies and procedures in place that say, hey, business computers are for business, not for you selling online your whatever it is you're selling online. I didn't want to go there. So, you know, we want to make sure that business processes are for business, that we're keeping personal things off the computer for compliance as well, and have some sort of ongoing management buy-in to the security of their business and their business data. So what we're talking about is business continuity and uptime.
You know, I think some of the things is I'm thinking about things of training the client to not do certain things. I'm going to say that probably in from what I've seen, probably the number one way that people are infected in some form or fashion is still predominantly through email. Would you say that's true, John?
Phishing email is definitely number one. I just got a call maybe 2 weeks ago, a construction company that I deal with that basically they almost transferred money that they shouldn't have. Basically, the office manager, she is actually very savvy and very computer smart, got phished. And before she sent the last transfer of money or the confirmation of money, the boss just happened to walk through the front door. And she saw him and she said to him, hey, I'm just about to transfer that money you requested. And he said, what money? So even with somebody that is, well-versed in all that, training only goes so far because, as we all know, more and more, the bad guys are getting more talented. It used to be pretty easy, Jeff. You know, you and I are old enough to remember the first phishing emails or spam emails we got when out of a 100-word email, there might be one word spelled correctly. Now we're getting phishing emails that have company logos that look legit, that contain information from our own company and our own name spelled correctly. It maybe even look like they came from our own domain, you know, Joe Jobs and things like that. Training only goes so far, but you don't want your users to walk out with no talent into the internet. I mean, think about all the damage that a user can do on the internet, and you don't need a license. It's not like driving a car. There's bad drivers on the road, but you can cause just as much damage for a business out on the internet.
So I'm thinking, I just came up with this in my head, and this is where ideas usually start. I'm thinking if you took basically all the clients in a shop and you put them into a workspace and had them get on a computer and go through a thing of where certain things would pop up on a screen, a certain type of email or whatever, and they would have to say whether it was legit or not. And if they get it wrong, what you could do is have some electrodes tied to the chair and you just hit a little button. And see, this would train them to automatically double think before they do anything because pain is gain, right?
I don't know. After a while, I think I might be comfortable with the shock, Jeff. You never know.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you're right.
Nintendo in the chat is talking about VirusTotal. And I use VirusTotal a lot. And luckily, I've gone back through my logs and took a look. But just remember with VirusTotal, we talked about it. Was it last week or the week before? If you do upload something to VirusTotal, that information is stored by VirusTotal and will possibly be shared with others. So do not upload any patient information or personal data that you may not want to share, like in a Word doc or something like that. Just a word of caution. But Nintendo is great. VirusTotal is a great product. I'm just looking at a couple other things in the chat. I don't know if you see that, Jeff. But if we move on from our training and boot camp, there's a couple other things that we need to discuss about securing our network and our layer protection. We probably all use a remote monitoring and management, Autotask, Ninja, things like that. So one of the things we want to automate there is patch management, keeping all of our software up to date. A lot of the time, pain is weakness leaving the body, Nintendo. A lot of times our users do not like patch management. A lot of times we don't either because sometimes those patches break what we're trying to do or they add new features and confuse our end users, which cause more support calls to us. But it's kind of hard not to patch in today's world. Secure your email. Back to your email conversation, Jeff. So we want to do email filtering. You know, if you use G Suite or Office 365, they handle a lot of the filtering for you. Make sure your email is set up correctly on your domain with SPF, DKIM, things we've talked about before, other great acronyms. And then if you want to get really advanced on your network, you can set up what's called a honeypot on your network. So if you feel that somebody might breach your network and you really want to know that somebody's gets in, what a honeypot does is attracts the bees, just like it sounds like. Somebody breaches your network, or you might even leave it exposed on your network on purpose to attract the bad guys so that you can sense or know immediately when they're in. It's just another way to manage your security and manage a breach.
That's a really good idea. I think it's something that a lot of people don't think about. How do you know when you've been breached? Because like I said earlier, there's two types of companies out there. There's those that have been hacked knowingly, and there's those that don't know they've been hacked. And so I think doing something like that proactively. Now, again, there's some companies out there that are not coming to mind right now that will actually, you can pay them a fee and they can set up some of these things on your network where you can actually get this information of somebody trying to penetrate your network. Now, going back to, we've gotten all this stuff onto computers and they've gotten through all our walls and everything like that. Now, is there anything preventative wise that we can test for, and maybe we can talk a little bit about, pen testing or something like that, where we can actually hire somebody to come in and test our network and see how robust it actually is?
Well, there's a lot of things that guys like you and I can do just to start out before we have to engage a third party. I mean, if you proactively, let's step back. If you have an RMM platform that may be able to do what is called net scanning every once in a while, or you can use a third-party product. Kind of caught me off guard here, Jeff. It's called NetScan that I use. You know, and you schedule to do that, let's say once a month. You know, the great thing about what a NetScan will do is it will advise you if something new is attached to your network. So let's pick on an orthodontic office. Somebody comes in, somebody thinks they're going to get funny, and they plug in an extra wireless access point into an Ethernet jack in the waiting room. I don't know why you would ever have that sitting there, but let's just say somebody did that. Well, the next time you do a net scan, you would see this device on your network and would give you a question to find out what's going on. Overseer also has a product that you can put on your network that will do net scans for you and actually report to you or notify you when there's a device on your network that wasn't there before. So that's pretty cool. The other thing is you can do from the web. There are tons of web pages which will do open port scans for you or port scanning for you or port monitoring for you. So just to make sure that you don't have any open ports on your network, i.e. again, somebody comes in from home, decides to plug in something else into the network, which maybe has universal plug and play or something weird going on it. And maybe it's opening some sort of hole in your firewall somehow. And all of a sudden the entire world can get into your network. I don't know if anybody listened to the latest Security Now, but I guess AT&T U-verse routers are having all sorts of problems with open ports where literally anybody and their brother can now get into a U-verse network, because the password's hard coded and it's not very hard to do. Did you listen to the latest Security
Now? No, I didn't hear that. And we're starting to have problem with these so-called router modems. I'm hoping that, especially from a business standpoint, that we can go back to where we're either getting our own modems and they're allowing us to do that, which I do hear, or they just give us basically a dead modem that all it's doing is passing the information, and then we attach the router and stuff to it. I know they want to control everything, but if they're poor at it, that's going to bite them in the long term.
I'm experiencing just the opposite over here. Like, I'm in Comcast country for most of my customers for the best value and bang for the buck for speed, but Comcast does not want to give us just a modem anymore. They want to give us their gateway device, which screws up everything. Because they want exactly what you're talking about. They want to create the free Comcast wireless network. They want to be able to get in and manage some stuff and do some things. But even in bridge mode, those devices are not fully bridged, meaning they screw up a lot of the voice over IP services and all that kind of stuff. So, yes, I'm with you. I wish we could just have a regular modem and life would be great.
Well, and so if you're doing voice over IP with any of these companies, which again, from that standpoint, for residential, that makes perfect sense. If you're in a business office, you probably should separate a lot of that stuff out.
I 100% agree. In a business, I think all of your devices should be separate. You should have, if possible, separate modem, separate UTM device, separate wireless. You know, keep all that separate. Just for management, firmware updating, security, and monitoring.
Because, you know, back in the day, it's nice to have an all-in-one device. But the reality is, when you do, when a portion of that device stops working correctly, you end up having to replace the whole device. Versus if it's in pieces and parts, you've got something that's wrong. Not only can you diagnose it a little bit faster because it's not all tied together, you can go, oh, no, here's the problem. There's no lights blinking on this thing. So this must be definitely the problem.
Technical solution, Jeff. Technical solution.
All right, so we've gotten past where we've done some proactive things. We've gotten inside the castle walls. We've gotten inside the network itself. We've gotten into the endpoint computers. I think a lot of times people look at, you know, we've talked about educating the customer. You know, shock therapy would work best, I think, but I don't think in the United States we're allowed to do that. So maybe in other parts of the world, if you're allowed to do that, that might be a good idea. I think, I don't know what exactly, what else we can do, because it seems like you have the customers that come to you with the same thing over and over and over again. How do you mitigate what's happening to them when they go, hey, I've got that pop-up again? And you go, okay, what did you do? And what's their answer, John?
Nothing.
Exactly. I did nothing. I didn't touch anything. I didn't do anything until you talk to them further and have like a 5-minute conversation, sometimes a 10-minute conversation, and come down to the point where I had this thing come in and I did click on it, but it didn't really do anything. So I didn't think about it. And it's like, I think we also need to teach our customers or clients to not be embarrassed when they screw up. There's two types of people in the world. There's people that have screwed up, and there's people that won't ever admit they screwed up. And so I think we need to get people to the comfortability of point where they are basically, they're okay with, hey, I messed up. I'm going to try not to do this again. The biggest thing I hate when it comes to technology, and I hear this all the time from many different generations, I don't know anything about that. I don't want to know anything about that. I just want it to work. Well, okay, I understand that, but you also drive a car and you have to know how to do certain things in that car. You can't just put gas in it and press the pedals and steer and get where you want to go.
That might be one of my biggest pet peeves when people say that. It's like, you're an adult. Learn to, you gotta take just a touch of literal responsibility.
Here. Exactly. And that's, so I think coming from that aspect, if we can teach people to not be embarrassed and to understand that it's okay when you screw up, just learn from your mistake and move on so this doesn't happen again. The problem is when that client doesn't own it, it happens again and again and again. And we sit here as they're, you know, trying to save them from themselves, frustrated because we know what they're doing, and we can't get them to the point where they have a realization that they are the problem and that they could easily fix this by just taking an extra second to think about it.
Well, let's take it to the point where our defenses are breached, our soldiers are dead, and we know we're infected. Now what? I'm going to preface this with, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not providing legal advice. I didn't play one on TV. I've not slept at a Holiday Inn in the last 17 years. So I'm a Hilton man myself. Anyways, moving on. So we're infected. So what do we do? Let's pretend we have a ransomware infection that got through and our computer is now infected. So the primary thing that everybody says is unplug the computer, unplug the computer. But there's some considerations that we have to do. There are a lot of ransomware infections out right now that if you don't reboot the computer, you have a second chance to get out of before a reboot or before a restart. all right, because they haven't totally activated. The second thing is if you're in any sort of organization where you have compliance concerns, HIPAA, FINRA, possibly PCI, you cannot actively go in and clean that computer. You will need to isolate that computer and remove it off and set it off to the side, because there will have to be a forensic investigation in order to determine if any data was removed from that computer and transmitted out into the wild. Because if there has been, then you have to get into your whole compliance or your breach notification reporting and reaction reporting on that. And that's a whole nother podcast that I think we had, Jeff. So depending on the businesses that you're dealing with and what you're reacting to, make sure that your response is appropriate for your customer and to the type of infection that they have. The great thing about it is I've been testing, well, I've used Bitdefender in the past. I've used Panda antivirus in the past. I'm doing some webroot testing right now. And all of those products, at least on the business endpoint side, on their software, will obviously report to you in a web console what infection has been found, if it is determined that. And so that will give you a hint on what your response should be as well. But be careful on the immediately reboot. I do agree that's primarily the best way to go to provide proof against or infection to anything else, but also be careful in your immediate remediation, because you may have to prove that no data has been transferred as far as compliance goes. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And so from that standpoint, how do we know? Because a lot of times if you have one that's infected, we know that anything that is attached to that network can also be infected. Not that it always jumps right away, but how do we, at what point do we basically have to shut a whole office down, especially when we're talking about compliance, and go in there and figure out what's actually gone on, which actually might put this particular office offline for a while?
Well, in the news, there's been some recent infections. Trying to think if it was a hospital or another organization that got a ransomware infection. And basically, they ran into exactly what you're talking about. The infection was so rampant in all their systems that basically they just decided we're pulling everything. We're putting in all brand new. We can't afford to be down as long as it's going to take for that forensic study to go. So they just took that opportunity to totally start from ground zero. Now, obviously, that's probably an outlier, because even in a small business, I don't know how many small businesses would be prepared. And also, this is something you may want to have a discussion about, because I would be willing to bet that most organizations that have these types of compliance concerns don't realize that this is what will happen if they have this type of infection. Because you can imagine the doctor or the business owner is just going to say, just get me back up. I want to work. Be prepared for that in any instance. And obviously, that's what every user says. Well, I don't care. I just make it work. You know, so then we just pop a CD in and 2 minutes later, everything's good. So, I mean, a floppy disk. Sorry, floppy disk. You know, but we talked about that FIM, and there are a couple of, they're pretty expensive right now. Panda has a FIM, probably the one that I've been keeping my eye on, and they've been at a couple of the, and I'll say why I'm circling back to this, but they've been at a couple of the shows that I've been to lately is a program called, or a service called, by Carver, C-A-R-V-I-R. And they are actually a reseller of a product called Sentinel One, which is an antivirus / FIM. And it's hard to explain, but I would go out. I'll put the link in the show notes and in the chat here in a minute. But their product is pretty amazing. So it detects something negative, not only malware, not only antivirus, not only ransomware, but any file doing anything of negative. And, you know, just like I said with the FIM, it logs all of that. So it does all the work for you. The Sentinel One management, or, you know, their team reacts to everything that happens, so you don't have to. And then there's a complete log of it. And great thing about the ransomware infection is they have a good example that they show is they totally infect a system with ransomware. You know, the Sentinel One blocks any data leaving anything. One button push puts the system back to pre-ransomware.
Ooh, nice.
Now, it's not extremely pricey, but, it, you know, it's $3 to $10 a month per computer. But depending on, or, you know, I, in that, all that pricing goes based on the amount of endpoints that you're protecting. Obviously, it might be more expensive, less expensive, but that's the pricing that I believe I saw at a show at one time. But if that's the kind of protection you want to pay for, and if the boss doesn't ever want to say I'm down, you know, you may want to pay for that.
And I think you're right, John. I think most people don't talk to the clients about what will actually happen. It's not just about loss of data. Hey, we've got backups. That's fine. We can get the information back. That really is, in a lot of ways, a non-issue anymore. There's many, many ways to do backups.
Hang on a second, though. I'm going to interrupt you, and I want to talk to you about that. How many of your end-user customers, business or otherwise, understand how that backup is working and how long it's going to take if there is a large catastrophic event to get your data back?
None. And that's my point, is because we don't tell them exactly what's going to happen. You understand that when, if worst case scenario, everything dies and we've got a backup and it's in the cloud somewhere, and depending on the internet connection and what they're being, you know, if this happens on the East Coast, let's say, there could be a lot of people affected with the same type of thing, and we got to get your information back. It could be days, weeks before we can get all that information back. So therefore, you have things where, like what you're talking about, John, where you can actually get the information, you can get that ransomware off the system and restart, or you have a, you know, like a Datto product that can basically turn into a server, a virtual server with all the information already on there, and you can be up and running within minutes. And a lot of people don't understand that they could actually be down for days and weeks and months.
Well, that's the beauty of a product like a FIM, is it's already done the forensic analysis for you. So you have the forensic information, you're done. So then you can go back to your Datto or your Cloudberry or whatever you're using and do your restore and be back up immediately.
Right.
But none of that's free.
No.
And I'm going to pick on like Carbonite. So, you know, it's a little different when you just have a Carbonite backup that you got to restore from that's slow. So just keep in mind all of those things when you are choosing the services that you resell to your clients.
Now, I will tell you, now with Carbonite, you know, I pay for it, and it's a personal service, but for my own network and things that I do here, Carbonite, I can basically, if my stuff is compromised and I need to get it back, they will send me a hard drive with all the information on there, so I don't actually have to download it again. But again, I pay a premium for that. It's not free. It's not the cheapest one. So
usually the question I ask my clients, and it relates to everything we've talked about, what's your pain threshold? 1 day, 3 days, 1 hour, 5 days, a week? And then the next question is, well, what happens if something happens that we are down for a day, for 3 days, for 5 days? What are you going to do? Because what if it's nothing on your end? What if you have a hurricane? The rest of the world's not stopping just because there's a hurricane in Florida.
That's right. Pen and paper, baby. Pen and paper. Which I'm sure a lot of doctors' offices and stuff would actually love to go back to for the most part. All right. So I think we've talked about a lot of different things that we can do, and just the different aspects of what you need to look for and things that you need to think about, and also things that you need to let your clients know about. Because a lot of times they're only going to get as much information as you're willing to share. And a lot of people will look at this and paint this as we are doing a doomsday scenario. Yes, yes, you absolutely are doing a doomsday scenario, because in the worst case scenario, here's what can happen. And as John said, you, Mr. or Mrs. Client, what is your pain threshold? How long can you afford to be down? If the answer is zero, that's fine. Here's what it's going to cost to make it zero. Well, we're not willing to pay that. Okay, so again, let's answer the question, how long can you be down, or how long do you want to be down before it becomes unbearable? Well, I can be down for a day. Okay, well, now that's a different scenario, and so on and so forth. But we need to go ahead and explain. Our job is to educate our clients and let them know, good, bad, or indifferent, what they're up against, because we're the experts, they're not. So that's what we need to remember. And it's not just about selling services and making money. It is, if you're in this business and you really enjoy what you do, which most of us do, you enjoy actually helping the customer out. Now, again, at the same point, You want to be paid for those services, and you should, because again, you are the expert. So just keep that in mind. Any other lasting thoughts, John?
No, I think that's a lot to chew on. And obviously, you know, it's a moving target. As threats change, so do our solutions. And like we talked about, you know, the bad guys, quote unquote, we get smarter every day. So I don't know how this is going to work for me, but I got to get smarter every day too. So
constantly. All right. So let's take another quick break and we'll get into our next section. All right. If you want to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/computer repair podcast. And our newest pledger has been from Brian Wheeler. Thank you, Brian, for actually going to patreon.com/computer repair podcast and donating. We appreciate it. You can definitely go over there. If you can set a threshold, we do 4 episodes a month, basically, sometimes a little bit less depending on schedules and whatnot. But that's $4 a month if you want to do that. You can also set a threshold where if you only want to give $1, you can do that also. So every little bit helps, and I appreciate all of our Patreon supporters for your continued support. You definitely make life a lot easier for what we're trying to do here. So let's go ahead, and I want to talk a little bit about this show, since we don't have any emails this week. And I want to talk about this show as far as there's a lot of things that, one of the reasons that I do this show, and I continue to do it week after week, year after year, is because I think it is definitely something that is needed. I think people, they need this instant information that they can take in, process. And to be honest with you, if I was to write this information out, it would suck. Really bad. So I'm more of an orator. I talk versus writing things down. And so that's why I chose this medium to share this message. And then I bring on great co-hosts with me, like John Dubinsky. We got Chris Carruthers. We've had Paco LeBron, Marvin B., a lot of these different people, and many, many others whom I didn't mention that come on the show all the time and share their take on the information we share. One of the things that I think about as we move forward into the future and continuing to do this show is I think about how can we best, there's a lot of people out there that listen to the show, and there's a lot of people that get good information, and we periodically from time to time, we will ask for people to give to Patreon, people to give to the Podnuts Network and all these different ways that we do things. We want to grow the show, and we want to do some of the things that you all want to hear from us. Because again, if the audience, the most important part, is not listening or doesn't care, then it really doesn't matter what we're doing. We're just sitting here talking to ourselves, which is fine. I love talking to John or any of these other folks. So with that being said, there are many things that could be done. Now, a lot of people don't like to be in the forefront. And I gather that from text, from the amount that we get to actually come on the shows. For some reason, I don't know. A lot of techs just don't want to. But there's a lot of talented people out there. And we've had people in the past who have done our artwork. You know, maybe some of the music and different things that we put on the show. You know, there's definitely room for improvement. And there's ways for people to contribute that kind of sit in the background. So here's what I'd like everybody to do. And John, you can talk about some of the things that you think about after I get done with this. But I would like people to, if you're interested or you have a talent that you think would enhance the show, would help. We need things like, you know, basically maybe getting sponsors for the show or, you know, just reaching out to different vendors and finding out what new products and services they have and maybe making it so that they can bring that on the show for free to let everybody know about it. Something we like to do. I don't have the time to actively pursue it myself just because this takes plenty of time away from other things in my life. And so I'm already spending enough time doing this. I don't have time to do all the things I'd like to do. But there are things like that need to be handled in the background that would pertain to this show or some of the other shows that are on the Podnuts Network. So what I'd like to throw that out there. If you want, please send me an email. Number one, You can tell us what you like about the show and maybe what you dislike about the show. It's real simple. I don't want to do a big survey or anything. Just send an email to podnuts@podnuts.com. Real simple, easy email to remember. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you dislike. And also, if you have a talent or something that you think could serve in the background to make this show better, I would encourage you to go ahead and put that information down. And then we can kind of look through it and see what types of things need to be handled. But I think we can make this a great show over time and really bring some things that are going to help business owners and technicians out there altogether. So that's my spiel. John?
I got 2 cents to add. Just like dealing with any vendor partner, you know, if this show does nothing more than keep you awake when you're driving your car, you know, I would reach out, or, you know, if I lose this paycheck, it's really going to hurt. So, you know, you got to be a good partner back to us. We want to provide exactly what you want, whether that's more humor, less of me, a whole lot less of Jeff, whatever it is. You have to provide just an ounce of feedback. So, I mean, I can't ask for any little less effort than just an email, you know, to me, to Jeff, to anybody. You know, just what you want is all we're asking for. Tell us what you want. Maybe give a little cash, get on that Patreon, you know, skip a stick of gum and give it to the Podnuts Network, whatever it's going to take. Or, you know, $25,000, $30,000. Either way, that's all we're looking for. In all seriousness, just a little bit of effort to be a good partner to the Podnuts Network, just to tell us what you want. And if you can give some of your time, talent, or treasure, that'd be sweet too.
One of the things that that could be done is, you know, topics, coming up with topics. Now, everyone on the network has been great at sending in topics from time to time when we've had a giveaway or something like that. And I keep a list of these, and these are sometimes where I pull topics or I look at what's going on. But sometimes there are other people out there that kind of stick in what's going on in the different forums, in the different Facebook groups, and what's really, they read the news all the time on what's going on in the technology world. And maybe there's some topics that we haven't touched on that people want to hear about. It'd be great to have somebody in the background that could parse that information and pull it together. And I'll give you an example of John himself doing double duty. He not only comes and shares great content on the show, which without him, I wouldn't have all the knowledge that he can share with what he does in his business. But at the same time, he provides you with something that was asked for a long time ago. He provides you with those wonderful show notes, which are basically links to the things that we talk about, which a lot of people really like. So that is an add-on service that John has been doing for us every time he's on the show, which is awesome. Because again, if it was just up to me, I wouldn't have the time or ability. Well, I'd have the ability. I just wouldn't have the time.
No, you wouldn't.
To put into that. Yeah, it wouldn't be as good as John. John's awesome.
That's right.
So anyway, yeah, there's a lot of things that can be done. And one of the things we want to do down the road too, and I've talked about this before, and I figured I'd just take this time since we're in a kind of a lull. I think we would love to do, if we could get a certain amount of money coming in, we'd love to do giveaways. And there's different products and services out there that we use or other people use that maybe it'd be nice just to get one of those products. And I also want to support the vendors too. There's things I could go to the vendors for and probably get for free. But again, that would be something that if it was done in the background, somebody that was solely doing that, there's only so much that you can accomplish on email. And email, let me explain this. Email is a great medium for contacting me and getting some back and forth with me, because I can check it when I want. I can take the time to respond and all those types of things. When you're talking to a vendor or other businesses out there, a lot of times email can be a great big time suck. So you might need somebody that can actually pick up the phone and talk to somebody there, because you know what? Not a whole lot of people call, I'm sure. And these people would love to talk to you and find out more about what you're trying to offer them, which in this case would be free publicity. So again, it's one of those things, we want to bring the information to you guys and make it better for you. When I first started podcasting, 3 years, 3.5 years ago, whatever it was, I didn't know all the products and services that were out there. When you talk about things like remote support, John, how many remote support companies are out there?
I don't know if I can give you a number, but I could probably name about 20.
Exactly. I literally think there's probably hundreds, and there's a lot we don't know about. And there's always people coming into the game. There's people that have been around for a while. There's ones that a lot of people stick with. So there's a lot of good information that we would like to bring to everyone to say, hey, you know, check out this product. Here's something new that's on there that's, you know, in the marketplace that might help you in your business.
If somebody was watching the show and participating in the chat right now, Jeff, Chips is, where is he from? He's from across the pond. He's throwing stuff in the chat and a couple of different products and services right now that I had never heard of. So here I am, supposed to be the expert giving some knowledge. Expert, I use that term loosely. And I'm learning from the chat as we're doing this. So I think that proves your point right now, right here, live. So.
And that's the other thing too, John. I'm glad you brought up that point because, you know, John will take that information from the chat room. He'll parse it. He'll put it in the show notes. So all that stuff is made available for people that are listening to the show 50 years down the road. And the other thing too is that the participation in the chat room is awesome. It's great to have people, you know, we would love to have it. And I guess another thing I would ask people is, and I've thought about this and I might as well throw it out there. We call this a live call-in show. And my first thought was, and John, you'll probably remember this, going back to, you remember the car guys on the radio? And they would sit there and give you some of the things that you might look for to solve your problem. So my thought was, when I started this show, and it kind of went on over time, I said, well, let's make it a live call-in show. You know, we pay for a Skype number so we can have, you know, that stuff come in. We've got some great call screeners that screen our calls, which thank God for those guys. Taz is in there right now. You know, so we've got some great people that are actually helping out with that. And people can call in, ask a question, and preferably not so much computer-related questions because you have, obviously, you've got Leo Laporte that does that on Saturdays and Sundays. He's got the Tech Guy Show, and he answers those end user related questions, but questions on business or questions on things that maybe somebody was thinking about doing, and maybe we can throw out some of the pros and cons. So that was our thought process to that. Now, again, it's not real easy to get everybody, I understand, on Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. during football season to get everybody to watch the show. But you could multitask and you could have this on your computer or your tablet and watch it while you're watching the game. And so, but there's a lot of things that if we could get more people involved and let more people find out, if more people knew about this, then we could get a lot more people involved and get a lot more interaction. Because like John said, the chat room, emails that are sent in, these are invaluable information that, again, without the audience, we wouldn't be able to do the, you know, give out the information that we give because you guys give us the subject matter to talk about. So, with that being said, I just think it's a great opportunity, and we've been doing this for quite a while. I would like to see this go to the next level, quote unquote, and see if what we can do to make this a better show to help a lot of people out there. So.
I will second that motion. And that would be Ray and Tom from Car Talk.
Car Talk. There you go. Car Talk Radio. There you go. Yep.
Yeah, I still listen to that when I'm on the road occasionally.
It's fun. They're funny. They just kind of, they gel together and they can sit there and take phone calls and talk to people who have real problems. And, you know, and just kind of, hey, here's what I do.
Now, I would also suggest the feedback if people thought our call-in number was a waste of time and they didn't want that or don't ever think they'll use that, we could put those resources somewhere else.
That is true.
Want to know.
Yeah. So any of this information. So let's go back over this again. Send an email to podnuts@podnuts.com. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you dislike. let us know if we should keep the live call-in portion of the show. Obviously, I always want to do feedback on emails, voicemails, and such, because, again, in the information we get from the chat room, we parse information from there. So I always want to have those avenues. But if you think the live call-in part is a waste of time, then, yeah, definitely let us know. And we'll look through that stuff and just figure out which direction would best suit the audience for the information that they want.
And Chips is from Chesterfield in the UK.
Ooh, nice. Definitely across the pond there. All right. Very cool. All right, John. Well, I think this has probably been the shortest computer repair podcast of all time.
We're over an hour, aren't we? We can babble for at least an hour.
Yeah. You might be able to. No, that was good. That was a lot of good information. But I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and we're probably going to end off the show a little bit early and let you guys think about some of the things we talked about today, and hopefully you will participate in what we've asked for. All right, John, if you could give us one parting thought and let people know where they could find you.
MavenGroup.net. Good luck to everybody down in hurricane country.
All right, man. Appreciate it. And I would just, like I said, appreciate everybody that is involved in one form or fashion. We couldn't do it without the great co-hosts or the great audience that we have. It would just be me talking to myself, and I don't find that very exciting. So, anyways, that's my parting thought. All right, come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnest.com/Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. You can also send an email to podnuts@podnuts.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. We have audio available over at podnuts.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.